Sask Ag Today with Doug Faulkner.
Good afternoon and welcome to Sask Ag Today. Coming up on today's program, the Saskatchewan Barley Development Commission is committing over $850,000 towards barley research over 5 years. We'll hear from the Research and Extension Manager for Sask Barley, Mitchell Japp, on that. There was very limited information on feeder steer and heifer prices in Saskatchewan due to low volume. Livestock economist Brad Marceniak will have the details on that for us. Spraying crops with drones is catching on rapidly in the United States. However, in Canada, not so much. Kevin Hirsch of SaskAgToday.com is attending a summit near San Francisco, and he spoke with Adam Berku, the founder and CEO of an American drone manufacturing company called Guardian Agriculture. We'll hear from him. All of those stories and much more coming up on today's edition of Sask Ag Today. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Milligan Bio. Milligan Bio now offers BioMeal for your livestock, giving your animals more protein, more energy, and more of what they need. It's also brought to you by Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist. Welcome back to Sask Ag Today. The Saskatchewan Barley Development Commission is committing over $850,000 towards barley research over 5 years. Research and Extension Manager with Sask Barley, Mitchell Japp, says the research will focus on areas of concern for barley growers in the province.
They are looking at managing maturity and uniformity in barley, crop establishment, disease pressure, and marketability. And so the projects are taking place across the prairies.
Uniform maturity in barley is one of the challenges producers have faced.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's an ongoing issue. Those late tillers that come in, they can be limiting as to when you're harvesting the crop. It needed to be consistently dry down, consistent maturity. It also presents an issue when we're managing for diseases like Fusarium head blight. You know, the Fusarium head blight pathogen is a pretty severe one. It's not one we've seen as much pressure from in the last few years when it's been so dry. But we know that it's going to rear its ugly head again when we get wet. And so having tools to manage that uniformity throughout the growing season will benefit growers both at harvest as well as Fusarium management, because that fungicide application timing is pretty critical. And to be able to get most of the heads covered in one pass with the fungicide, Fusarium timing is pretty critical to managing that disease well.
Another focus is testing mycotoxins.
So mycotoxins actually ties in quite closely to Fusarium head blight. So the most common mycotoxin that is talked about around Fusarium head blight is vomitoxin or deoxynivalenol. And so that is something that grain buyers are looking for. They're looking for low levels of that mycotoxin because it can cause issues. There's limits both for feed and for human consumption, and so those have to be managed as well. And so the projects we've got this year are looking into mycotoxins like deoxynivalenol, also called vomitoxin, as I mentioned, or DON. And so those are really, I think, are part of us looking at marketability of the crop to be able to better understand what the impact of these mycotoxins are and to get good measurements of them.
The announcement adds to the 40 other current research projects funded by Sask Barley. The projects supported were reviewed and funded in collaboration with the Agriculture Funding Consortium. It's time now for the Ag Review portion of our program, and that's a presentation of New Era Ag Technologies in Swan River.
GX94, Ag Review.
Australian canola production is expected to rise in 2024-25, while the European rapeseed crop will likely be smaller on the year. That's according to updated estimates from the United States Department of Agriculture's Foreign Agricultural Service, citing favorable price expectations for canola compared to wheat and barley. The USDA's Australian attaché, was forecasting an 8.5% increase in seeded canola area in the country in 2024-25, with production up by 14% at 6.5 million metric tons. If realized, that would be Australia's third-largest canola crop on record. Canola exports from Australia are forecast at 5.1 million metric tons, which would be up by 16% on the year. Australian farmers are just starting to seed their next canola crop, with moisture conditions generally in better shape than they were a year ago. Pulse Canada President Greg Cherowick says the country's pulse export program remains in great shape amidst mixed news for the industry. On April 5th, India's government extended the duty-free status for all yellow pea imports until the end of June. After 6 years of tariffs and restrictions effectively cutting off the market, India eliminated the tariffs last December. Since then, the country has become a top destination for Canadian yellow peas, with 735,300 metric tons already sent in bulk this marketing year so far, according to the Canadian Grain Commission. Cherowick says Canada will be able to ship between 800,000 and 900,000 metric tons by the time that window closes. He notes it's not quite where we were in terms of our pea volumes when we would have hit 1.3 million metric tons back in 2015-16, but it's very significant. Canadian organic producers are petitioning the federal government to increase support to their sector. The Canadian Organic Trade Association, or CODA, sent an email to members on Monday. CODA launched an online petition on April 2nd, sponsored by NDP MP Alistair McGregor. The petition says that Canadian consumers are driving strong demand for organic food and asks the federal government to establish policies and programs to encourage growth in the domestic supply of organic to meet the market opportunity, and to meaningfully recognize and incentivize sustainable, resilient food systems, such as organic, across all departments that relate to Canadian food policy. The petition needs at least 500 signatures to be presented to the House of Commons. By this morning, petition E4909 had 596 signatures. People can sign the petition until May 2nd. New Brunswick's agriculture industry enjoyed a second straight year of record exports in farm cash receipts. The sector finished 2023 with more than $1.2 billion in farm cash receipts, which measures the gross revenue of farms from the sale of products and direct program payments to producers. That's up from the previous record of just over $1.1 billion set the year before. Agriculture and agri-food exports were over $778 million last year, topping the previous record of $689 million from 2022. Potatoes and potato products led agriculture and agri-food exports in New Brunswick. New online resources will help Canadian teachers educate students in grades 10 and 11 about what it takes to grow the food they eat. Agriculture in the Classroom Canada has partnered with CropLife Canada to develop interactive teaching resources designed to help students explore some of the realities of modern farming by seeing how to successfully grow carrots, turnips, and potatoes. The resources draw on CropLife Canada's Real Farm Lives documentary web series, which was created to showcase the work and lives of farm families across the country. Season 3 of Real Farm Lives, which these resources are focused on, features the McKenna family from Prince Edward Island, who are deeply committed to growing high-quality food for their family and families across the country, while leaving the land in better condition for the next generation. And SaskAg Today is always available on podcast. Listen to past shows whenever you want. Find them easily by going to gx94radio.com. Also, you can hear the podcast on your Amazon Echo. Just enable the GX94 skill and choose SaskAg Today. And yes, it is free. And that's today's Ag Review. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will return right after these messages. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. I'm Doug Faulkner. It's mainly sunny and 13 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. There was very limited information on feeder, steer, and heifer prices in Saskatchewan due to low volume. And while there were no heifer prices for the week ending April 5th, provincial livestock economist Brad Marceniak has the prices for three steer weight categories.
Saskatchewan feeder steer prices in the 5 to 600 pound weight category had the only price increase last week, increasing $8.16 per hundredweight to average $443.50 per hundredweight, which actually established a new all-time record high price for them. The 8 to 900 pound feeder steer weight category had the biggest price decline, losing $9.40 per hundredweight to average $316.50 per hundredweight, while the 900 plus pound weight category declined $6.83 per hundredweight to average $286.17 per hundredweight. There were no weekly prices for Saskatchewan feeder heifers reported on April 5th, and that was due to low volumes of animals sold.
Last week, there were just 3,981 head of cattle marketed in the province, well below the 14,088 head of cattle marketed the previous week, and below the 9,165 head marketed the same time last year. It was different for market-ready cattle in Alberta. As Marceniak notes, prices were higher compared to the previous week.
Prices of Alberta cows for the week ending April 5th were noticeably higher from the previous week. D2 cows averaged $171.68 per hundredweight, and that was a price increase of $6.32 per hundredweight from the previous week, and which established a new all-time record high price for Alberta D2 cows. D3 cows were up also $6.39 per hundredweight over the previous week to average $154.06 per hundredweight. The Canfax price for Alberta-fed steers for the week ending April 5th was $244.45 per hundredweight, and that was up $5.90 per hundredweight from the previous week when it was at $238.55 per hundredweight. Prices last week were the highest year-to-date in 2024 and less than 2% away from the record-high prices set back in 2023.
He says continued concern over new cases of what is now called bovine flu in U.S. dairy cows negatively affected the cattle market down south and to some extent in Canada.
Continued concerns over new cases of avian influenza in U.S. dairy herds last week, which spread into additional states including New Mexico, Idaho, and Ohio, sent U.S. feeder cattle future prices significantly lower week over week. We also saw U.S. fed cattle future prices also lower, along with U.S. beef cutup values. In Canada, while some feeder weight categories were lower, we did still see some higher. So we could expect some market volatility and mixed markets here in the short term with the cases of avian influenza in the U.S. cattle herds. But overall, I think the industry still looks positive for beef markets, as U.S. beef production is expected to continue declining here in 2024. Consumer demand for meat, and particularly beef into the summer, will be a key factor where prices go.
That's Brad Marceniak, a provincial livestock economist with the Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture, with the latest cattle market update.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for June closed at 172.85 today. That's down 2 full cents. August live cattle closed at 170.65, down 190. May feeder cattle closed at 236.52, down 292. August feeder cattle closed at 247.60, down 250. May lean hogs closed at 96.55, down 222. June lean hogs closed at 105.55, down 302. And that's the livestock market conditions. Spraying crops with drones is catching on rapidly in the United States. However, in Canada, applying crop protection products with drones is technically not allowed because the Pest Management Regulatory Agency has not approved any products for drone application. Kevin Hirsch of SaskAgToday.com is attending a venture capital summit in the Silicon Valley near San Francisco, and he talked with Adam Berku, the founder and CEO of an American drone manufacturing company called Guardian Agriculture.
Our customers are generally applying anything that's labeled for aerial, which has been a great boom to the industry. I think globally, spraying drones are growing at close to 50 or 60% year over year, and I think we'll quickly see the same in North America.
So describe your machine and its capabilities.
So people find Guardian after trying maybe a DJI or an XAG, the small Chinese machines, and people recognize the concept of drone spraying and understand it's the future, but quickly see the shortcomings in terms of productivity and cost and reliability. And so folks find us next and find a machine designed and made in the United States, built to automotive and aerospace standards, with a payload that's large enough to do productive work, a speed, the whole user experience, and built back from the way that we farm in North America.
So how many gallons and what kind of application rates? Because it depends upon the application rate per acre.
Yeah, that's right. So we generally support 2 to 20 gallons per acre, and anyone who's ever sprayed knows that difference has a dramatic effect on acres per hour, and a lot of things can affect acres per hour, but generally speaking, at the lower rates, we're looking in the 40-plus acres per hour. At the higher rates, 20 gallons or so, pretty rare in Canada, I would say, but then you're getting into the mid-high teens of acres per hour.
So what's the payload, and how often do you have to fill up, and how often do you have to charge batteries?
The average flight time is around 3 minutes, and in that 3 minute, you're dispensing 20 gallons. You come back and land, it's about a minute to refill the tank and recharge, and you're out again for another 3 minute cycle. So it's a constant back and forth to the load station, and that tendering is mobile, generally on a flatbed with a being towed by a water truck.
And that's where it recharges as well? You can recharge without removing and replacing batteries?
That's right. A major difference between our machine and a lot of the competitors is we've really simplified the ground process. I mean, anyone who's sprayed knows that the productivity is really in the tendering more than the spraying, and whatever you can do to streamline the process in between swaths, in between runs, you need to do. So we've invested heavily in supercharging technology to completely eliminate the really laborious and dangerous wear and tear on moving hundreds of pounds of batteries all around. This is a simple plug-in, refill, unplug, fly again, back and forth.
How much training does it take and how much certification to be able to fly one?
I can't comment on Canada yet. We're working on it. But in the States, at least, it's around 7 days of training, assuming everyone's got their own custom applicator's license. No pilot's license is required to fly a Guardian machine, just their state custom license. Class 2 medical and the FAA here has approved our training program, which is about 5 days.
So are you selling most to farmers or most to custom applicators?
Right now, we're selling primarily to retailers and custom applicators. We think over time, we'll get to individual growers. I think growers will quickly see the benefit, and a lot of our mission is to allow growers to really own their own aerial application for the first time instead of always being dependent on a third party. But for now, we have great relationships with co-ops and retailers around the country.
So what kind of a price tag, and how many have you sold?
So we've got a very large backlog. Any new orders placed now are going to be close to 2027 delivery, 2028 perhaps. And the price tag for the aircraft alone is $119,000.
You probably some add-ons to make it all work, though. Your cost wouldn't quite stop there.
Yeah, I would expect people, when they have to get their mix tank, there's other things you need to build the full rig, kind of the turnkey, probably starting at 200, if not higher, depending on what people want to do.
It must be a great ride to be on the cusp of something that's being so successful.
We've been working on this in a very humble way, letting Mother Nature be our guide in product development. We like to be right where the rubber meets the road. We've got a great team. We're about 60 people. And we just want to build something real that works with just a simple, reliable, get the job done.
So you're here as a sponsor at a venture capital meeting. Did you have venture capital to get you going?
We did. Yeah, we did raise some venture capital. And for the next stages of the business, we'll be looking at venture capital again, and also other forms of non-dilutive capital, debt, government-backed loans, whatever we can. We're excited to create hundreds of jobs manufacturing in North America. And we're excited to be offering a NATO solution to what's otherwise, I think, an industry that will be left to Chinese competition if we do nothing.
Any guesstimate as to when Canada will allow registration of products for drone application?
It's a tough question to answer. I mean, the ultimately, I think the grower being loud enough will get the way, and it's just unavoidable. The supply of traditional aerial application is only going in one direction, and that direction is unfortunately down. New machines and form factors will need to come. I think it can be as soon as 2 years, but perhaps three, which is unfortunate. I think let's do what we can to accelerate that.
That's Kevin Hirsch of SaskAgToday.com in conversation with Adam Berku of the drone manufacturing company Guardian Agriculture. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will be back right after this. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. After a 10-year absence, the Western Dairy Expo has returned to Saskatoon. The event begins tomorrow, but cattle started arriving at the Prairieland Ag Center on Monday and Tuesday. Bryce Fisher is on the Western Dairy Expo Organizing Committee. Bryce owns a dairy farm in the Cudworth area, about an hour northeast of Saskatoon.
So it started in 82, the very first show, and it was at the old Saskatoon Auction Mart. And then in 83, the committee wanted to grow it, and they moved it to Prairieland Park in 83. And it ran continuously till about, I think, 2014. I was out of showing cows for a few years, and that's when I wasn't around. So I don't know what happened, but it just lost some momentum and all the rest of it. I myself started showing cows again here a few years ago. We're very active in the show industry. People were going to a show in BC, but because it was in BC, it was really limited to who could go. You know, Saskatchewan is really central in Western Canada for a show. If you want Alberta and Manitoba exhibitors, we are central. Then the BC Spring Show got canceled this year. So at the last minute, when we found that out, we thought, well, let's try to get it going here again. I took the lead on it, and we put a committee together, and last minute, and we found a week at Prairieland that worked, and we started getting sponsors, and once we kind of knew we had enough to pay the rent, we announced we were going to have a show. So we want to build it back. Years ago, I was on the committee, and it was the biggest show in Western Canada. You know, hopefully we got a solid footing. Sponsors have been great. We're doing things a little different here. We're not paying prize money at this show. We're doing meals, you know, so everybody benefits. Costs to take a crew to the restaurant is a big bill. So Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, all the meals will be covered for all the exhibitors, commercial and cattle exhibitors.
He tells us what response they've had in the form of entries.
Really good. We had right on 200 entries in the Holsteins and about 40 in the Jerseys. So that's a, you know, quite a large show in today's standards. Really proud of that. Probably when it's all said and done, there'll be really close to that 185, 190 Holsteins hit the ring and hopefully a 40 Jerseys.
Fisher explains where the dairy cattle came from.
So the furthest west is Chilliwack, B.C. Coyman's West Coast Holsteins have come from Chilliwack to support us. They're the ones that kind of ran the show in B.C., and we went out there, and they felt they needed to come back here. There's a herd from the Okanagan, then a bunch of herds out of Alberta, several herds out of Manitoba, and then really, really strong support out of Saskatchewan.
He then goes into the differences between dairy and beef cattle shows.
I don't know how to put it in words. There's a lead up to the show. Yes, we need a lot of young people. And that's probably the biggest thing I noticed after being out for a number of years is just a resurgence of young people wanting to show and wanting to participate and having a strong work ethic and values. Maybe it's just generational, the way ages work and that. And you watch tomorrow when the junior show is on, we'll have 15, 20 kids in the peewee class, right? And that's the start. You know, that's the footing. And then the junior show will be a good size. Them kids, you know, the good ones that are aggressive want to go on and work with good herds and good cows and go on to other shows.
Bryce Fisher is on the Western Dairy Expo Organizing Committee. The event runs tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday at the Prairieland Ag Center in Saskatoon. I'll have more with Bryce Fisher coming up in just a moment.
Commodities Update.
Canola futures closed mixed in the nearby months today. May canola closed at $6.38.80, down 50 cents. July canola closed at $6.49.10, up $1 per metric ton. May Minneapolis wheat closed at 6.51 and three quarters. That's up a half a cent. May Kansas City wheat closed at 5.94 and a half, up 17 and a quarter cents. May Chicago wheat closed at 5.58 and a half, up three quarters of a cent. May corn closed at 4.34 and a quarter, up 3 cents. May soybeans closed at 11.64 and three quarters, down 9 3/4 of a cent. May oats closed at 3.37 and three quarters, that's up 8 cents. And that's the commodities update. We're back with Bryce Fisher, a member of the Western Dairy Expo Organizing Committee. The show is back after a 10-year absence. He was asked if modern dairy farms are multi-generational operations.
Dairy has got larger. There are a few corporate farms, but the majority still are family farms. They're just larger family farms. There might be three families, you know, trying to make a living out of it too, right? So when you divide it by, you know, three, they're just good average size farms combined, right? And then that's kind of the way of today's world efficiencies, right?
He brought his own dairy cattle to the show.
We have about 20 head in our string. It's quite a bit, but I'm close. I'm only 40 minutes away. We're pretty excited. Some new cows, a bunch of fresh cows, the cows that calved out again, some cows that did great at the big shows. The biggest show in the world is World Dairy Expo in Madison, and the second is the Royal Winter Fair. So we got a couple in our string that we're kind of in the right in the top or first there. And I'm not the only one. There's, you know, lots of other farms with high-quality cattle here. So it is a world-class event. And today, later today, there's several Americans coming up and several people out of Eastern Canada and that coming to see what's here to buy or look at.
Fisher talks about how the sales will take place.
Yeah, we don't have a sale per se. Now, we did for years, but we don't have a sale per se anymore. But there will be some cattle traded this week. I've priced a couple. There will be some cows trade hands, no doubt about it.
He says a good dairy cow can be worth a lot of money.
You know, this is the show world. It's distorted badly. You know, a good dairy cow to milk at home is $2,500, $3,000. There's cows here, $100,000, but you know, then it's a bigger picture. They're going to go on and win at the big shows, or they got a genetic package that they can market and sell embryos worldwide through in vitro or embryo transplant, and they're sought at. There's genetics that are sought after. Yeah.
Fisher says dairy cows are getting better and better.
It's improved substantially. Sometimes you gain and realize you lose a little, and you got to turn around and reevaluate. You know, udder quality has come a long way. Production has come up. Our genetic gains have enhanced what we do. New things nowadays are A2 milk, so we realize we can breed for that.
And he says the dairy show is open to the public.
We would really appreciate the more participation we have. It's a welcoming environment. Come down, ask questions. We're all available. We'll answer any questions. We got commercial exhibitors here, and we have a lot of knowledgeable young people in the industry from all over. If you got questions, please feel free to come down and join us and ask questions.
Bryce Fisher owns a dairy farm in the Cudworth area and is a member of the Western Dairy Expo Organizing Committee. Western Dairy Expo runs tomorrow through Saturday at the Prairieland Ag Center in Saskatoon. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will return in 1 minute's time. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. I'm Doug Faulkner. Seven groups spoke on Bill C-355 yesterday as the Commons Agriculture Committee got back to work reviewing the private members' bill. It calls for an act to prohibit the export by air of horses for slaughter and to make related amendments to certain acts. The bill is supported by the Liberals and the NDP and opposed by the Conservatives and the Bloc Québécois. One of the people the committee heard from yesterday was Seneca Crossland, the president of the Canadian Horse Defense Coalition.
Over the past decade, polls and petitions have convinced us that many Canadians are as appalled as we are by the treatment of horses in the course of air export for slaughter. We have studied ATIP documents that detail deaths and injuries having occurred to horses being airshipped to slaughter. One particularly egregious 2014 example involved a suffering horse breaking through a wooden crate and kicking a hole into the fuselage of the plane. The horse was dead on arrival. On their website, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency states that they are aware of 5 horse deaths associated with live exports since 2013. If we go back one more year, we discover from ATIP documents that 6 horses died in 2012 and 3 in 2011. Numerous injuries associated with these horse exports have been documented over the years. The industry that transports horses overseas for slaughter ignores the well-being, safety, and comfort of these animals. Their suffering is overlooked for the sake of profit. It's time to raise the bar for horses and to bring their welfare into line with what Canadians expect.
Captain Tim Perry, the president of the Airline Pilots Association, also appeared before the committee yesterday. He says the committee is concerned the bill, in its current form, puts added responsibility onto the pilots of planes carrying horses for slaughter.
The primary responsibility of the pilot in command for an aircraft is the safe operation of that aircraft before takeoff, in flight, and after landing. ALPA Canada believes that Bill C-355 does not recognize this and as a result will negatively impact our members by putting an unnecessary and redundant obligation accompanied by excessive penalties if in contravention of the proposed legislation on them. Further, we maintain that it is improper to place any additional responsibility on a pilot when the pilot's responsibilities are already clearly defined in the Canadian Aviation Regulations and Aeronautics Act. We also believe that all responsibility relating to required written declaration in the proposed legislation be the sole responsibility of the Chief Officer of Customs at the airport, as identified in the bill.
Alberta Tory Member of Parliament John Barlow posed this question to Captain Perry during the question and answer period that followed.
Is there any other commodity, any other product, any other cargo that a Canadian airline pilot would be carrying that is asking the pilot to be responsible for the end use of that commodity, product, or cargo?
No, sir, not to my knowledge. For instance, with the shipping of dangerous goods, which is something that we undertake regularly, there is a paperwork component to the job. However, the responsibility lies with the shipper and regulator in order to ensure completion and compliance.
Bill C-355 was introduced by Liberal MP and committee member Tim Louie.
Farm Bulletin Board.
An event coming up in July. It's the 2024 Crop Diagnostics School. They're asking you to save the date. That'll be held July 24th and 25th in Melfort. And, of course, SaskAg Today is always available on podcast. Listen to past shows whenever you want. Find them easily by going to gx94radio.com. Also, you can hear the podcast on your Amazon Echo. Just enable the GX94 skill and choose SaskAg Today. And, yes, it is free. And that's all the time we have for today's Farm Bulletin Board. It's now 1 o'clock in Saskatchewan, 2 o'clock in Manitoba. Time to check the GX94 Precision Weather Forecast. For the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today, partly sunny with a 30% chance of scattered showers. Winds northwest at 20 to 35, gusting over 50 at times, and a high of 13 degrees. For tonight, partly to mainly cloudy. Winds northwest at 15 to 25, and a low of 0. For tomorrow, becoming sunny. Winds northwest at 15 to 25, a high of 9, an overnight low of minus 2. For Friday, a mix of sun and cloud. Winds southeast at 15 to 30, a high of 11. For Saturday, partly to mainly sunny, a high of 15, and Tuesday, partly sunny with a 20% chance of scattered showers, a high of 14. In the Paw and Dauphin, it's 9 degrees. Swan River is at 11, Brandon 12, Show Lake Russell, Roblin, and Regina all reporting in at 10. Saskatoon and Wynyard Wadena Kelvington are at 8, Hudson Bay 14, Broadview Mooseman 11, Indian Head 12. The Yorkton Melville region has a mainly sunny sky, a northwest wind at 30 kilometers an hour. 53% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 13 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for SaskAg Today for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines